City Talk.
The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Let's do Sound of Merseyside. Haven't got Gibbo in this week, but absolutely delighted that we've got Merseyside singer-songwriter Stephen Langstaff. Morning to you, Stephen.
Good morning.
And in a most, as you said to me off-air, rock and roll fashion, we've got your mum and dad, Eddie and Rose, who've joined us. Well, they just came up to have a look out the window. But
Eddie and Rose, say hello.
Yeah, morning in the background. They're all shy, aren't they? Yeah, they've come to have a look out the window, actually, and drag them in the studio.
Basically, yeah.
Which is quite nice. Brilliant to see you. We're going to play one of your tracks a little bit later on. Generally, what I do with Gibbo is we always say, right, for every guest, give us a lyric line so we can sort of determine what sort of person you are. So
right.
Your favourite lyric line for people who don't know Stephen Langstaff.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know if it's my absolute favourite, but based on the time I've had to think
right,
about it, there's a lyric by Nirvana in a song called Very Ape when he says, if you need anything, please don't hesitate to ask someone else first.
Oh, very nice.
Which
quite a loving sentiment there.
Well, It's quite sarcastic. It's, you know, it's like, because it's the way he sings it. He goes, if you ever need anything, please don't hesitate. So it's, you're expecting him to say, please don't hesitate to ask me. He says, please
ask someone else.
Hesitate to ask someone else first. So I like that. I mean, the reason I like it is just, I loved Kurt Cobain's lyrics. I thought he was really clever and quite funny, subtly funny, despite all the, you know, all the history and all that and the mythology. Was actually really funny.
You're probably too young to have seen him, aren't you? How old are you?
Yeah, I'm definitely too young.
You're definitely too young to have seen him, aren't you?
But I grew up, a neighbour of mine, like he just had a lot of this stuff, so I got into them.
Right.
And just the energy of it was amazing.
Big influence for you. Who? Where did you grow up and who were your influences?
I grew up Kirby.
Right.
And influences, I liked Damien Rice. He definitely hit me quite early on, as someone who was very, very much writing from the heart, very direct, quite unpretentious, just but really open hearted. So that was my background. That's where I've come from, like the acoustic singer songwriter background, and then I got into like, I mean, major influence was like I started listening to Tracy Chapman as well. Someone gave me an album of hers, got me into it. I was like, this is incredible music, you know, so simple but really powerful, and that's what I try and put into my music. And I mean, I just listen to everything though. I mean, I listen to, like, you know, a lot of indie, like quite an indie kid, so I listen to a lot of like Coldplay, Killers, all sorts. But recently I've listened to more like electronic stuff, like an R&B and soul. I love soul music. I love more gay, I like classic soul, but like stuff like Frank Ocean. And there's a band called The Internet, who are from a kind of, it's similar area in LA as Frank Ocean. Listen to that.
I'm amazing we've only just seen a band now called The Internet. You would have thought someone would
have
taken that earlier,
isn't
wouldn't
that
you?
Funny? Yeah, you're right. And there's not like, there's no like commas or full stops, like as if someone else has also, it's just The Internet. It's really clever.
Quite really simple clever. For you, Stephen Langstaff. Is
yeah.
it just you on your own? Have you got a group around you?
Oh yeah, I've got musicians who are
collaborating. But are they ever changing?
Ever changing, yeah. It's evolved. I've got like, there's a girl called Saturn who's actually on the bill as well at this gig next week at the Arts Club.
Mm.
She does her own stuff, but she's worked with me for a couple of years now, and she's like a staple.
She's like a rock of
you.
She's
the rock. Yeah. And then I've got like bass player and drummer, or not a drummer as such now. It's a guy who plays electronic kit, so it's like electronic beats.
It's never just a normal drum these days, is it?
It's not so much.
It's always a computer that does a million things.
It's a digital age, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's seeping into a lot of music. So I just like to get the balance between organic and. I don't know, just in digital and just experiment a little bit. And
were you quite obsessive as a young lad about becoming a musician?
Yeah.
Was that the only thing? Is that right, Mum and Dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Locked in his bedroom.
When he was 10, he had his own guitar.
Yeah. Dad's saying when he was 10, he had a guitar. So that's when it all started, did it?
Yeah, obsessive. Yeah, but one of the classic, just, you know.
Locked away.
Yeah.
Writing.
Yeah, absolutely. Writing all the time. When I learned guitar, I never really wanted to be a guitar hero and learn all sorts of solos. It wasn't really about that for me. It was instantly about, as soon as I could like play four chords roughly together. I was writing, so it was always about songwriting for me.
And you so taught yourself guitar, did you?
No, I got some lessons.
You did get lessons. A lot of people do tend to. It's one of those odd instruments, so people do tend to teach themselves sometimes, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I learned. I was shown the basics, and then from there, I've just done my own thing. I've kind of just developed my own style of playing. And it's funny because I've never thought of myself as a great guitarist or anything like that. It's a means to an end. It's a means to writing the song. But when I was, I think over time, you know, tooting my horn a little bit, but I think I've become a much better guitarist than I realised, only because of what some other people have said to me. Like when I was down in London in March, I was in with a French producer. Sorry, I'm knocking that with my hat.
Okay, so that trendy hat you've got keeps bashing into the microphone. Go on.
That happened to me the other day on Merseyside. I was singing and I was kind of nodding my head, getting into it, and I kept
bashing it without knowing it's there. Sorry, go on.
I was working with a French producer in London, and he offered me some guitar session work. I hadn't even entered my mind to ever do anything like that.
And foremost thought of yourself as a guitarist.
No,
more of a singer and a songwriter.
But it's just developed over time. I think you just develop your own style. I think that happens with a lot of guitarists. Even if they've had lessons, you get them and then you're shown the basics. But then hopefully you then go on to just do your own thing and develop your own style.
Right. Where was your first gig, Stephen?
It was in Kirby.
Town Hall.
Town Hall. Kirby Suite.
Kirby Suite.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was
you were aged, what?
Band, like, 14.
And where's the last gig you've done?
Last gig was at Leith. Oh, no, it was a Camp and Furnace.
Great venue.
Yeah, it was a Camp and Furnace.
Absolutely.
But before that, we did a sold out gig upstairs at Leith. That was cool. And then before that, it was the Epstein Theatre.
Do you feel you've been on quite a journey, musical journey in that time?
Massive.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm still obsessed with it. It's not like, you know, that never fades. So, yeah, I've been on a big journey.
And are you obsessed with being sort of nationally recognised sort of thing? Or is the obsession just to improve yourself musically?
That's all I want, really. And obviously, you'd be lying if you said, oh, that's all, you know, it's just about that, and I don't care if anyone listens. Of course, I care if people listen, because that's why I'm doing it. You know, it's a massive motivation to do it, is to play to people. So I do want to, you know, I do plan to reach a lot of people, as many people as I can, but I don't really compromise the music for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been around and enough people now and seen things going on around me that I understand the mistakes you can make and compromises you can make, and you know, like, I've come across singer songwriters who are in my position who do a lot of co-writing or something, and then because there's, in some ways it's an easier path, in some ways it's not actually, but it's quite an attractive path to take, and there's a lot of obvious sessions you can do for that. I've seen that a lot of people go down that road, and it compromises that what they do, what they wanted originally do as an artist. So I was having that conversation with my mate Matt, and he's really good. He's quite a successful writer for others, but he tries to do the artist thing as well. And I was just,
and it's
like,
hard to do both, is it?
You can do both, but you have to. You can't. It's like you can't be in love with two people at one time, can you? So that's the truth of it. But you can do stuff on that. Like, I do bits of side, like, I've written stuff for like a girl in South Africa who's like signed to Universal, and she's done a couple of songs that I wrote in Nashville, but that was just a session that just came about, and I was there and I did it because I know people, and it was just fun, and the connection was there, and then, oh god, yeah, she's recorded it, that's really cool. It wasn't like it just happened because I'm a musician and I'm out there and I'm doing stuff, whereas if I thought about it a lot more and focused on it more, what I'm trying to do as an artist and what I'm trying to, my own style that I want to do, that would suffer.
So that would,
so
sort
I've
of
seen
lead
that
to,
happen.
Who's your best critic then? Who's the best person to tell you you're actually doing? Is it mum and dad? No, they don't understand
No, they do. They do. Yeah. Just probably my manager Mark, or my best mate Jay. They're brutally honest.
And you need a bit of that in the music industry, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do.
And it's fairly cutthroat. As enjoyable as it is, it's fairly cutthroat and intense as well, isn't it?
It's not a game. Like, it's funny because our friend got in touch and said, could my friend give you a call because her daughter's like 13 and she's starting to do stuff in Liverpool, and you know, she knows who you are and wants to ask, you know, for some advice. So I was like, okay. You know, I don't know.
Me?
Yeah. But I met the girl with her mum and dad, and her dad was sort of quite, when like the girl wasn't listening, the dad was sort of saying, what's it really like then? You know, and I just said, well, it's not a game. It's not a party. There's a lot of party and there's fun. It's really fun. And it's really, if you get to do it with your life in whatever way, it's a privilege. And it's not like, it's better than a 9-to-5. To me, it's more attractive than a 9-to-5 thing. But
it's just as hard as a 9-to-5.
But don't have no illusions that it's easy. Mm. You know, it's not. It's like, you have to love it. It's like another friend of mine, he's in a very successful band, and we were talking about it last time I was in London, because I was staying with him, and he said, only do it if you can't do anything else. He said, if you can't do anything else, do this. You know, and that was his like outlook on it. I was like, I totally agree with you. That's how I feel. I can't do anything else. So all the pitfalls are worth it. It doesn't matter, because I'm happy to be doing it. Do you know what I mean? But it's not like, it's not this breeze. It's hard work.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.